Good morning. This is Wednesday, March 4th, 2020, and it's a beautiful day out there. You're tuned into the morning show with myself, Susie Prez, and my co-host. Who are you over there with a smile on your face?
Chris Bessler.
Good morning, Chris.
How are you doing?
Fine, and we're happy to be here. We're happy to have a community radio station, and this is listener-supported, commercial-free community radio for North Idaho. So thanks for tuning in. And we have a great show lined up for you today. We have four smiling faces in the room. Chris, why don't you tell us who we have?
We have a contingent from the Forest Bird Charter School. We have Principal Jennifer Grieve. Okay, I'm sorry. I should ask that in advance. Also, teachers Sarah Evans, 7th grade science.
Good morning.
And Lindsay Holland, algebra.
Good morning.
And off to the side, we have Mary Jensen. She's the administrator.
Good morning.
And we're going to hear all about Forest Bird Charter School, how it's doing, a little update, some of the events coming up. But also, we have the teachers here because we want to learn about this new method of teaching that you're using. It's called self-paced, mastery-based learning, and it sounds really exciting, so we'll hear all about that. Also, at the end of the hour, we will have a recorded interview with the co-chair of the Othello Sand Hill Crane Festival that's coming up in Othello, Washington, March 20th through the 22nd. So that's a recorded interview. I had a chance to talk with Kurt, the co-chair of that festival. It's very interesting how many sandhill cranes come through. So we will hear about that.
Yeah, we don't see those over here, but it would definitely be worth a trip over there to check those out.
Yep, so tune in at the end. Stay with us the whole hour. You'll hear all about it. And what else do we have, Chris?
Well, let's start out with what's happening weather-wise, Susie.
Okay, from the National Weather Service, we have currently 41 degrees. Is that true? In the morning? That's amazing. And yesterday it was 39. I couldn't believe it. But it's really nice and beautiful and sunny out there. And we have, for the day, mostly sunny, a high of 46. Tonight, increasing clouds, low of 26. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy, but I see sunshine in the picture, high of 49. And looking across on Friday, start to get some precipitation, as they call it, and that will probably be rain since the highs will be in the 40s and the lows in the 30s, except for Saturday night, it gets down to 26 degrees and a slight chance of rain, which would be snow. Anyways, that's the National Weather Service forecast.
And a couple of things going on outside. Sunrise this morning was 6:35 a.m. It'll set tonight at 5:23. Days getting longer over the course of the last week. We've picked up 24 hours of daylight each day. So, and we're getting close to the spring equinox when we'll have 12 hours of light, 12 hours of darkness. And then after that, the days keep getting shorter. So we're on our march to summer here. Do want to mention that daylight savings time begins Sunday. So remember to turn your clock an hour ahead Sunday night.
That's good to know.
That's good.
Thank you.
Going to lose
that.
An hour of sleep there, but
it's okay.
It's kind of a good adjustment. We have those longer sunny afternoons after after school's out.
Right.
And
exactly.
I guess the legislature is deciding, kind of looking at the picture of keeping daylight savings time static from now on.
Yeah, you know what?
I don't know about that.
I have mixed feelings about because I'd be curious to see what the teachers think. Because the kids in the morning will be going to school when it's dark. They have to be walking to school and stuff in the dark. During that period of time when we don't move the clock back. What do you guys think about that? Has that been any kind of concern?
I think that's no different than November, December, January, and February. So I would rather have the light in the afternoon so we can have more energy to go home to our families.
Okay.
Well, and I think about after-school activities, too. Having that light at night is a little bit better than having to play football with a day-glow ball so you can see it.
The teachers have spoken. Also, we have a lot of voting things coming up and deadlines. Yesterday, I sat in with Julie Calamine, and we visited with Mike Rosedale, our county clerk, and Charlie Worm, who's the election supervisor. And that podcast was, or that interview was very insightful. You can get it on our website at krfy.org and get some of the deadlines. But I have to say, down at Election Central, down at the county office, they're very helpful also. So there's a lot of deadlines coming up. Like early voting ends Friday at 5. Mm-hmm. I know that.
That for the presidential primary, which is Tuesday, March 10th.
Exactly.
Here in our state. And then, but we have a second primary after that, and that's the primary for the state and local elections, and that's not till May 19th.
Right.
So we got to vote twice, folks, once for the president, and then come back and vote. Actually, I think it's even more important to vote for the local elections.
Because our voice can count. Now, in the Reader last week, they had a primary primer, and I think Zach did an amazing job of laying it out with an interview with Charlie Worm. So there's lots of places to go. Also, Sandpoint Online has a lot of links. Why don't you tell us, because that's your thing, Chris.
my day job is part of it is, there's it's called Sandpoint Election Central. It's on Sandpoint Online. You can get to it directly if you go to sandpointelections.com. We'll go straight to that page. And it does have all the key dates that you need to keep in mind, especially as we come up on these local elections. For instance, you can change your party affiliation for the local election. It's too late to do that for the presidential election at this time. But and then there's a dates for early voting for the primary election will begin on April 27th, and then you can vote right up until May 15th, early voting. Of course, the election itself is May 19th. There are some announced candidates already. We have contested races for Bonner County Commissioner District 1 in the primary, the Republican primary. And there's a contested race as well for Idaho Legislature Seat B. The Sage Dixon seat, Gary Suppiger, has announced he's going to be facing him in the Republican election. So, anyways, lots of stuff going on. It's going to just keep getting more intense, actually, as we get closer to some of the filing dates.
And if you have an absentee ballot that you requested and it's sitting on your cupboard, now's the time to get it filled out and sent in. I think they need to receive it by Friday at 5 also.
Yeah. Yeah, so you could actually drop it off there if you needed to.
You can,
yeah.
I know. My mom's got lost, and they sent it back to us, and I'm going to have her fill out. She's 92, and I'll take it down to make sure her vote counts.
Yeah.
And another thing that was in that whole discussion was, if you're unaffiliated, it's kind of like they called it the magic ticket. If you're unaffiliated, you can affiliate at the poll. Mm-hmm. You just need good ID, photo ID.
Yeah, that's party affiliation, whether you want to vote for the Republican or the Democrat candidate. And other things going on around town, I just wanted to throw a shout out. POAC has a really cool sounding event tonight. It's called Hear My Voice. It's the fictional story of a young woman who introduced the American suffrage movement, was introduced to it by her great aunt. And it's a fictional depiction of historic events, actually. And that's at the Heartwood Center tonight. And it's put on by the Pondre Arts Council. Of course, this weekend, one of the big events coming up is the Follies. If you don't have tickets, too late, because they're sold out. But that's a big fundraiser for Angels Over Sandpoint. Great thing to support. There's music going on around town, other events happening in our active little community here. So go to our community calendars on krfy.org and see what's up and get details on all these things.
And just a reminder, if you can't stay with us for the whole morning, we certainly hope you can. We are recording this interview today with the folks from the Forest Bird Charter School, and it will be on our website at krfy.org. So I think with that, we can begin with our wonderful teachers, administrators, and principal here. Again, Mary Jensen, you're the charter administrator, Jennifer Grieve, school principal.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And two teachers, Sarah Evans, 7th grade science, ooh, fun, and Lindsay Holland, algebra. Yeah. So again, thank you for joining us. And let's start with Jennifer Grieve. You're the principal at the charter school. And Mary, I'm sure you'll chime in on these kind of questions. Why don't you give us an update? What is the Forest Bird Charter School? Because we have new listeners all the time. And how is it going?
It's actually, we are having a wonderful year. Mary and I have little meetings at the end of every day, and we just kind of keep looking at each other saying, knock on wood, this is a great year. We have a great group of kids. Teachers are really excited to try out new methodologies with students, and so we're having a lot of fun this year. Forestburg Charter School is a, we like to remind everybody, we are a tuition-free public charter school. One of the biggest myths in the community is that there's a tuition to go to our school, and there's not. We are a free public school. There are also myths about whether the Bird Foundation financially supports us, and they don't. We are named for Dr. Bird in honor of just who he was as a person, and we still do little things around the school all the time to try to honor he and Dr. Pamela Bird, because they were such an inspiration for us. We are currently in the midst of open enrollment for next school year. That's an exciting time for us right now. We can talk about that later if you want. We got seats in all of our grade levels available. Families can come down and take tours and ask questions and even meet with some of our current students. Our students love to show off the school and provide tours for families. So that's kind of what's going on for us right now.
And the tours, I presume, are by appointment.
Yeah, yeah. Call in, mm-hmm. and we can set that up pretty easily at the school. The number can be found on our school's website at forestburgcharterschool.org.
Okay. And Mary, you're the charter administrator. Why don't you, I think of you both as the dynamic duo. How long have you both been holding this fort down? And how is it going from your perspective this year?
Oh, we've been in these positions for about 6 years now. Before that, we were teachers. Jennifer was at the beginning of Forestburg Charter School in 2001 in various duties and a teacher. And I came on in 2008 when the high school was developed. Mm-hmm. And it's been really interesting and fun dual leadership, which is unusual to have a dual leadership in a school. And I really appreciate everything that Jennifer does that I don't like to do. And I'm sure.
And that would be vice versa. Yeah. I don't think Mary and I talk about this a lot. I don't think that we could actually do this job without a partner and in this working relationship, because mm-hmm. a charter school is its own small school district. So not only are you doing the duties of a principal and administrator within a district, you are also doing things that you would have somebody in a district, larger district, doing. Mary takes care of all of our Title I duties. I take care of all of our transportation. The list goes on and on from there. I keep trying to give her busing and she won't take it.
No. We will chaperone. I was going to ask,
surely there's some things that neither one of you want to do, yeah, but somebody's got to pick
busing. No, Jennifer loves to busing. Yes, she volunteered. I'm sure of it. But to help delineate, I do a lot of the superintendent-like mm-hmm. duties, and Jennifer does the traditional principal duties, but we cross over back and forth as well.
Yep.
So admin and students and the working operation of the school, kind mm-hmm. of the separation. But together you make it happen. And you mentioned that it's a charter school. But what grades are? Did you mention the grades?
I didn't, actually. Thank you, Susie. We are grades 6 through 12. We have about 38 sixth graders. And then it averages 54 to 55 moving up. And I'm going to look at Mary. I think juniors and seniors were right around 45 as an average.
Each class.
Yeah.
Yes.
So in a nutshell, how would you describe the difference between a charter school or the benefits? Maybe not the difference, but the benefits that you have gleaned and put into place of a charter school. What makes it special?
Well, for me, one of the biggest things I think is that each charter school gets to be its own ideology, right? On some levels, there are art-based charter schools, there are classical learning-based charter schools, there are project-based charter schools. What happens for a family is that they get to look at their community charter and say, does this fit for my child? Because I think every teacher in the world laments that one kiddo that they couldn't reach because it just wasn't working for them. And with a charter, you have an option in a community to say, okay, maybe this is a better fit for the way my student learns. So mm-hmm. I think that's one thing.
The differences from our charter than other charters is that we are a project-based learning charter. We don't do a lot of testing. We believe our students can show us better what they've learned with practical applications rather than a multiple choice test, for example. We also have small classrooms. So none of our class sizes are over 22, and many of them are really ranging between 10 and 15. Our parents seem to really like the smaller class sizes because the teachers have the ability to help the students more when they don't understand what something is happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just brought up a subject I think we want to dive in on, this teaching methods, and you're mm-hmm. trying something a little different now, as I understand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Self-paced, mastery-based learning. I guess, Lindsay or Sarah, do you want to jump in on that?
Sure. So in the seventh grade classroom, I noticed that the students were more willing to make corrections to their work when they knew they would have the time they needed, and they knew that their grade would improve as they corrected their work. And that's really mastery-based learning is you get a chance to make revisions and improve where you're at. So I started doing that in the seventh grade a few years ago, and the kids can work through their curriculum at their own pace, and they can come to me for help. A lot of my classroom time is now spent helping individual students, more like a tutoring situation, one-on-one, than doing big lectures or running whole class activities.
Does that add to the work that the teachers have to take on? Because you have, instead of looking at a whole class and keeping them concisely together, you have such individuals that you're working with independently, and either of you can address that, but does it create more work for the teacher, or is it worth it?
I'll take that, Susie. So for me, I teach Algebra 1. And this is my first year doing more of a self-paced. And I was worried about that at the beginning of the year because I thought, how am I going to tailor, 11 different lessons in any one class time? And for me, what I found is it is a lot of front loading. I have to make sure that I have all their units prepared. For math, the way it works is that I'm available to give, I call them live lessons, with each student. However, I also found that a lot of my students really like to be able to go online and listen to my lesson. I just record myself and I put it on YouTube. And then I link it, and the kids, they love that. And I think that some of what I've been realizing is that they enjoy it because they can go back, they can stop stop me talking by pausing. I watch some kids, they have their subtitles on. So not only are they hearing the instruction, they're seeing me do the problems and walk them through. We have live lesson notes that they fill in. But they're also able to read it as I go. And then if they need to go and reference that lesson again later on, they can do that, which has been the feedback from the kids has been great. But what I've also noticed is those students that I had a hard time reaching before, because maybe they hate taking notes and they feel like it's busy work. They have that option that if they know how to do it already, they don't have to sit through. Their notes aren't graded. It's really a tool on how do you learn? What can I give you to help you? And then if you need to go back, there's resources that you can. So as far as more work, in fact, I found that it's freed me up tremendously during the class period to go and help those students individually and meet them exactly where they're at.
So rather than giving a lesson for the whole class, mm-hmm. you record it, and then each one has their own device to watch it. Okay.
Yeah, all of our high school students, they have their own laptop or school-issued device. And we use the Canvas system as our kind of school interface. So they can get onto their Algebra 1.2 course, and then there's modules that I have set up. And so they click into those, they see all the lessons that are in there. And then once they master one, they can move right on. And in math, a lot of things are building blocks that you need to master one thing before we move on. And so I just got frustrated with the traditional way of teaching because I felt like I knew I was having to move along when I maybe had two or three kids that still needed more time. But I didn't have the structure at that point to slow down. And I also felt like my students that were wanted to accelerate their learning quicker were being held back and almost feeling resentful of that system because they felt like they were stifled. So now those students, they can work ahead and maybe they finish the course early. And so there's enrichment activities that they can work on and earn an honors credit that way, going deeper into different things.
So I'm curious how wide of a spectrum of learning do you have going on in the classroom?
That's a really good question. So right now for our second trimester, we have, let's see, there's four different units. And I have some that are in the middle of the first unit. They're making progress, but it's a little bit slower. And I have some that are almost to the end of that fourth unit. Most of them are in the middle. So you don't see huge extremes, but there's one or two. And they, you know, the cool part about it for me as an instructor is the ones that are going a little bit slower, they're not giving up. They're persevering through it, which in and of itself is a skill that we want to teach our young people.
And Sarah, in the science department, what are you seeing in the same realm?
I could not agree with Lindsay more. Everything she said, I agree with. It takes more effort on the front end, making sure you're organized, making sure that the curriculum is there for the students to work through. You having an online platform like Canvas that we have at the charter school is huge. I don't really know how it would be possible to do it without that because they have access to it all the time. But I'm seeing the same thing. The students that are behind are able to not feel that pressure that they have to catch up or skimp on something because they want to get to the next thing. So they're really mastering wherever they're at. So it's been incredible. And another unintended consequence that happened in a positive way was that students that aren't normally the helpers of students that are behind mm-hmm. become the helpers because they maybe are the middle of the pack students, but they are ahead of maybe a couple others. And so they are the ones that will end up helping the ones that are the farthest behind. And they get this sense of pride. And even sometimes the ones that are normally the farthest behind, they might master a certain topic first, and then they become the helpers. So I feel like it helps everybody feel successful.
Kind of equalize, bring a little confidence. That was going to be one of my questions about peer mentoring is the term I was going to use, but I can see how that really also forms a social aspect, a healthy social aspect in a classroom, especially if one student's really kind of gets something soon and others don't, but maybe the next time it's switched around because we do learn differently.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Sarah, do you use the same video methodology that Lindsay does?
I do not record myself. But luckily, with the internet, there are so many resources out there that in science, you and probably any topic, you can find a resource that will help the students. And it really helps with students that are absent as well, because if they need to learn how to do Punnett squares in genetics, there's a video on there. It's not me, but there is someone on there teaching Punnett squares. And that was actually the lesson a few years back that also made me go in this direction was a student came in and I had already put the video online and he came in, he'd missed class for some reason. And he said, I don't know how to do Punnett squares. And I said, oh, well, there's a video on Canvas. And this is several years back, really. And it really pushed me in that direction because he was so happy that he didn't miss the lesson and he could go back and see it. But we also do discussions. I don't want everything to be online because I think there is a part of that human connection. And in science, to be able to discuss, yesterday we were talking about space myths and going through those. And the kids were having so much fun discussing outer space and asking questions and thought experiments. And I don't ever want to lose that part. Mm-hmm. So that's how I start every class. And then we move into work time, independent work time.
Okay, Sarah. So what's a good space myth?
A good space myth is that space smells like burnt steak.
Really?
And the science behind it, the astronaut was explaining, is that because space is a vacuum, it sucks molecules out of the metals and things in the ship that you wouldn't normally smell, and they have sort of a burnt steak smell.
Yeah.
Is that a myth, or is it?
No, it's a myth that face smells like burnt steak, right. But there is some truth behind the odor that is being described.
But yeah, the International Space Station smells that way.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
I'm wondering also, this is fantastic. How long has this, I mean, I'm sure it's evolved into what we're calling right now self-paced, mastery-based learning, but as teachers, you see what students need and where they thrive. So it's been going on naturally for a while, and now it's just formalized. Is that what I'm getting?
I would think so. I think that all teachers, we want to be able to individualize instruction to where our students are. But then there's also that pressure of you have the end of the term that's coming up, and we want to make sure that we get all of our stuff covered. So there is that pressure.
How does testing play in with this method?
Okay, so in my classroom, what we do is we have, within each unit, there are certain skills, and those skills are directly related to the state standards that they need to know in Algebra 1 to provide those building blocks for geometry, Algebra 2, pre-cal, and so on. So within each unit, we have, let's say, maybe 7 skills, and they work on, they watch a lesson, they do an activity to apply the skill, they practice the skill. And then what they do is they assess that skill, and the mastery piece comes in that they have to get above 7 out of 10. So they need to score above a 70%. If they don't, it's not a punishment. They just need to go back and do some more stuff. We sit down together. We talk about the mistakes. There's no penalization. Penalty is a better word. There's no penalty for that. It's just we talk about learning. If you're making mistakes, that means you're actually learning something. If you don't make a mistake, you already knew it and you're not really learning. So we really celebrate that. And then they move on. And so what's neat about this is that the students get to realize that, you know, maybe they've mastered 3 out of 5 skills. But those 3 skills, they know, they can do, they're going to remember, instead of maybe in a traditional system where they get a 60% on a test. So they kind of know some things, but they might not really know any of it.
I like this because I want you for my algebra teacher. I want to go back.
No, she's ours. No, she's you can't take her from us.
No one can. But I remember in the old method, kind of the other way of teaching, you could get lost and get a 60% on a test and never gain those skills and then move on at such a rapid pace that basically you're done.
Right.
You never really get algebra.
Right.
So this is a real foundational way of learning, so you're building.
And I think one of the things that I have seen is that the kids' confidence, which I really feel is just as important as all the skills that I'm teaching them, their confidence is through the roof because they're accomplishing things. When they see that, I scored 100% on that skill, they own that. And they're like, I worked really hard. I have my notes. I can do it. I can teach some other students. And they walk away from each of those feeling really good. In fact, at the beginning of the year, well, toward November, I polled my students to see, you know, where their confidence was at, because I've seen so many kids come through that they say first day, I can't do math. I don't know how to do math. I've never been good at math. And their confidence is so low. So I asked them, I said, how do you feel? Do you feel like you are more successful in math here? And 80% of them said that they were. And then I don't have the data in front of me, but there was a chunk that said it was about the same. I think there was only one out of all my students that said that he was still struggling with his confidence. So that was huge for me.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do with a student that may not quite be getting it? Do you just keep working with them?
Yep.
Maybe get tutoring?
Yep. Well, the beauty of this is that I have my class period. I can go and coach that student. And we sit down. And that's what I refer myself to. On day one, I told my students that, you know, yes, I'm listed as the teacher, but really I'm going to act more like a math coach. So I'm going to come along, I'm going to encourage, I'm going to support, I'm going to give you those options of how you can be you can initiate your own learning. And then I'm really going to celebrate with you when you accomplish your goals. So for those students who are struggling, we just sit down and we do some more, or I tailor. Maybe they're missing just one little spot of the skill, not the whole thing, just a tiny piece. So I can tailor some practice and some things that we can talk about on just that, and then we can try again.
It sounds like it It's an opportunity to really see the student, to really know them
yeah.
as individuals. And that has to equate to that whole confidence and who they are as humans as they develop.
Right.
They were seen by their ninth grade algebra teacher.
Yeah.
Or science teacher in seventh grade.
And if I could jump in on that too, one of the things that I think I personally have found most fascinating watching both of these ladies do this style of teaching is that questions always come from other teachers about, well, will that work for the middle school kid because they're so squirrely and they can't think, oh, well, will that work for the 15-year-old because they're so independent? And what I've watched for Sarah and Lindsay is they're demonstrating it can work really well at any level. Sarah has a large group of 12-year-olds that are doing this, and they're doing really well with it. Lindsay has a large group of 15-year-olds that are coming through with, yes, some of their own mathematical baggage, if you will, and making strides with it. And so it's what I'm learning is that it's not something that is particular to any age group or cognitive level of any student. It seems to be working for all of them.
Mm-hmm. And is this the practice in the whole school? Is this the methodology that you're using?
No, we have teachers, you know, really trying it out. And you guys asked earlier, you know, what is a nice thing about a charter school? One of the things, and I have to look at Sarah and Lindsay, my hope, and I feel Mary's hope too, is that teachers have an opportunity to try something new based on what's best for the students. Yeah. When they're looking at their classroom and they're looking at what kids are doing and struggling with, what is best for their students. They are kind of the trailblazers in this. We have a lot of our teachers, Lindsay's actually getting ready to do some professional development with our teachers on what she's doing in her classroom. And I'm happy to announce right here to the world, to Sarah Evans, that she's going to help out with that. But just being able to talk to teachers so that they can start to look at what would it look like in an English classroom, mm-hmm. for example. Mm-hmm. What would it look like in an upper end science classroom? What would it look like in a sixth grade STEM classroom so that they can start to imagine that?
I'd like to tag on to that. Our school has moved to a mastery-based philosophy where students get to revise their work and turn it in. The self-paced portion of what they were describing is depends on the teaching style of the teacher too, because we don't want our teachers to leave what they're really good at,
right.
And because just like the students, if they try something that they're not good at, it may not come off as well for the students too. These two young ladies are very good at what they do, mm-hmm. and with their training, they're going to help some other teachers who will be good at it. But not every teacher will embrace this because they won't feel like or won't be able to be as good at this technique as other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's ask Sarah a question here. So how about parents? How are they reacting to this methodology? Are they even dialed in on it?
You know, I haven't had any complaints from parents. I think anytime you're looking at a child and seeing them more as an individual, a parent is going to be supportive of that. So I have had no pushback from the parents at all. I mean, it's been just smooth sailing from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. It sounds incredibly exciting. And Lindsay, you wanted to add to that?
No, I was just going to echo that when we just finished our student-led conferences for the spring, and the feedback that I'm getting is really positive. And I do think that it's, like you said, Sarah, you're looking at their student as an individual and you're meeting their needs. And I think as parents, that's what we hope for our kids, that, yeah, they're going to be getting these academic skills, but they're also going to be able to shine and their confidence is going to soar.
And I can jump in that as a parent as well, because my child has had both of these women and to this day talks about how much she loves this process. Her love of science grew working with Sarah in sixth and seventh grade. She told herself all the time she was not good at math, and then she met Lindsay Holland, and now I think Lindsay won't let her go for the rest of her mathematic career. So as a parent, and an administrator, you remove yourself, you know, you have to sometimes, but we have really enjoyed it. My husband thinks it's wonderful too. Mm-hmm.
Well, I just want to remind our listeners, thanks for tuning in. This is 88.5 KRFY. This is our community radio station, and we're here in the studios for the morning show today, Wednesday, March 4th, with the folks from the Forest Bird Charter School. We have Principal Jennifer Grieve, Charter Administrator Mary Jensen and teacher Sarah Evans, 7th grade science, and teacher Lindsay Holland, algebra. Yeah. And really talking about this wonderful, well, from what it sounds like to me, and enthusiastic teachers is a key proof, because you both probably are really enjoying teaching with this method.
Yes.
It's not a grind. It's different.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. So, Sarah, your mention of the space myth deal, it's kind of interesting to me. But we kind of have things popping up in science all the time that it's changing so much, or we're learning so much. And I'm thinking right now about the coronavirus. Do you put that into your, can you design your classroom curriculum so that you can take it into account? Something might pop up during the course of the year that has really interesting science really weighs in on.
Absolutely. And I think that's really important. Just yesterday, a student said, can we learn about the coronavirus? So, I think that's key in science, is to always be on top of what's going on and embracing those new things that are happening. We just did a whole thing on the fires in Australia. Mm-hmm. So the bones of the curriculum is there, but at any time, I can just go on Canvas, add another assignment, publish it, and the students can work through that as well.
I'm going to tag on to that as well. We don't have textbooks or a set curriculum in any of our grade levels, so we can do relevant, up-to-date things in all areas. And I think that's one of the beauty of our school and our teachers, to be able to jump in and throw in the current political environment, the science accomplishments, finding out what the archaeological dig just came up with yesterday. Yeah. That changes the whole view of a culture. It is amazing to watch how dedicated and well-versed our teachers are to be able to jump in and add these current things in the curriculum at any time without having to sit down and hit the rote curriculum a textbook sets out.
Well, we're kind of going to wind down here a little bit, but we have a whole bunch more to learn about this free charter school that is a public school. And you already kind of told us a little bit about the current enrollment and seats available, and parents can come and take a tour. Mm-hmm. But just a little bit more on that and contact information.
One of the things that happens for charter schools is the Idaho state law mandates that you have a period that you open for enrollment, because a difference for us is that we can set the number of seats that we have. Traditional schools, any kid who comes in the door, they're taking. And so because we can set those seats, the state mandated that you can't pick and choose. And so they tell you, you have to have an open enrollment period. You advertise it so many different ways. The Bee did a really great news release on for us when we started our open enrollment. And then at the point that you close your enrollment, you have advertised how many seats you have available in that grade level. And if you have, let's say I have, at this point, I think I have 19 seats open for 7th grade. If I get 19 or under applications at the end of enrollment period, all those kids are in, no questions asked. If I have 20 or more, then everybody's name literally goes in a hat or a box or whatever I have nearby to do a lottery. Students within the Lake Pend Oreille School District are chosen first. After siblings of currently enrolled students, they have, through the law, an automatic in. And then students within the Lake Pend Oreille School District, they are the next in the layer. And then anybody outside of our local school district is in the next layer of the drawing.
And have you had to do the lottery?
Mm-hmm. The last probably 4 years, we've had to do the lottery. And it's really nice. We get somebody from a member from the community. Maybe we'll ask one of you guys this year to just come and watch and make sure that we're being ethical when we do this. We had somebody from the chamber last year came and watched. And we sit down and we have all the books. I have all my notes from the state and the training on it. And we go through and just seriously draw names out of a hat.
So if a family doesn't get their kid in 1 year, do mm-hmm. they get a better chance the second try time they try? I mean, because it seems like just by luck of the draw, there would be times when a family never gets in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is how it works. You know, that's an unfortunate thing with it. And we tell parents all the time that if you don't get in this year, watch the wait list. There's always movement for everybody, you know, in June and in August because families move, you know, families change their minds, situations change. And so to always pay attention to the wait list because it is going to fluctuate. And then we remind them if they still want to get in the next year, then they have to reapply. Mm. We don't hold on to the applications year to year.
Mm. Well, I think just from what I've been hearing today, and we've had you on a few other times, that we are very fortunate in this community to have not just a charter school from the grades that you mentioned, but such wonderful people running it.
Thank you, Susie. The mighty duo team
that we have, the dynamic duo is what I call you. And so people can go online to the Forestburg Charter School, and it's a great website, and get information. And if you want to take a tour, you have young children in a elementary school now. Now's the time.
Yep.
And I just want to remind everybody that when you type in forest, it has two R's. If you just type in forest, like with the trees, you end up in a different charter school that's in southern Idaho.
Idaho, no kidding.
But there's another one. Yeah. Okay.
Is it not a forest bird, though?
No, it's a forest charter school, but it... they're fairly new.
Google's not quite that smart yet.
Well, yeah, it thinks it is, but no, I don't think it quite is yet.
Yeah. Do you have any events you want to mention coming up?
Our electives department has their amazing electives expo coming up the 19th. This is where our students and teachers get to showcase all of the wonderful art that they've been making, whether it's their ceramics, their watercolors, their collages, any of those kinds of art. Our Spanish department, our foreign language department, is having opportunities for students to showcase what they've been learning. We have middle school and high school photography students that'll be showcasing some pieces. It's really one of the funnest events because kids get to show you what their passions are. They get to show you those things that they do sometimes on the side, quote unquote, that really are the things that they love the most.
And that's March 19th.
Yes.
Okay.
And I have to say, every event, when we're right up to it, we always think it's the best event.
This is true. Because we love them all.
We have great events. I know the community probably knows very well the economics fair in the fall. So right now, this one's coming up. So this one's
we love this one.
Yeah.
This is the one. Well, again, thank you so much for coming in. And you're always welcome here at the 88.5 KRFY studio because we want to support education in our community on all levels. So Principal Jennifer Grieve and Charter Administrator Mary Jensen, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us. We always like coming and talking with you.
Yeah, anytime. So we're going to take a quick musical break and then be back with just a couple announcements. And as I said, at the end of the show, we'll go out with an interview that I had with Kurt Bronwert. He's the co-chair of the Othello Sandhill Crane Festival, and so stay with us. We have more. Well, we're going to get to our interview, Chris. This is with Kurt Bronwert. He's the co-chair of the Othello Sandhill Crane Festival that's coming up in Othello, Washington, March 20th through the 22nd. I had the opportunity to interview him the other day. They called us. They wanted to get on the radio, so I did it. And if you don't know where Othello is, it's about 40 miles south of Moses Lake, Washington. And they have these big fields where all the cranes come. It's very interesting. The interview is interesting just because he talks about what it really is, why they have a festival and how those cranes show up and why. How do they know when they're going to show up and things like that?
Yeah, and they have talks and stuff that go along with it. Yeah. And it's just a big... it's a wildlife spectacle if you want to go see it. And,
They have over 2,000 people from all over the world. Well, coming out.
Yeah, pretty cool. So, and that's only a few hours' drive from here. So,
Here's your 9-minute and 21-second interview with Kurt Brownwin from the Othello Sandhill Crane Festival. And you'll hear a little bit of music at the end and then all day long, Otto's Eclectic Mix. Have a beautiful day.
Yeah, bye now.
Chair of the Othello Sandhill Crane Festival. Coming up in Othello, Washington, March 20th through the 22nd. Thanks for contacting us, Kurt, here at KRFY to help get the word out about your festival. This is the 23rd year. So, Kurt, tell us about the festival and why this is special.
Well, it is the 23rd year, and it has grown in popularity and in what is offered. So there's a total of about 40 different lectures going on in six different hour slots during the day on Saturday in the gym, and there's around 30 tours, all of which can be signed up online. And it's all about the wildlife in the Central Columbia Basin and the migratory cranes coming through.
Okay, well, I think it's really helpful for a listener to get a verbal or a story of what it really is like to see those sandhill cranes coming through and why you've created a festival around it. It must be quite spectacular. So if you could just give us a picture of what someone coming over to Othello might experience.
Well, the cranes themselves are a bit amazing. They're 4 feet tall with a 6-foot wingspan and weigh about, I think it's about 3 pounds. And we have tours that go out to spot the cranes. We scout where to find them before the tour, the festival begins. And you can get up to eyesight distance from them, and with every bus will have binoculars and scopes that people can look through as well. And they also, when they're in the fields on the ground, there are dancing rituals they do that are really kind of friendly companion dances, and they're milling around and eating the corn seeds and crustaceans that are in the field, or angleworms, or something like that. And they really have a lot of antics as you're watching them. And this is a stopping place for them on the way from Sacramento Delta of California to Alaska to nest. And they're stopping here to refuel and get ready for the long push, last push up to Alaska, and that's why the local fields are important.
Well, when I think about, you've picked a date of the 20th through the 22nd, how do you know they're going to stop on that day, or are they there for a couple weeks?
Well, there's about a 6-week period that they're here, and in the center of that 6-week period is the largest percent, because the flocks, or what are extended families or clans, they tend to stay here 2 to 3.5 weeks, but there's some that arrive earlier and some that arrive later. And so we pick the festival date in the middle of when the typical arrival time is. But of course it changes at least somewhat for every year. Like last year when we had snow in the middle of March, they were a little later coming.
So you just have to hope for the best with your dates that you pick ahead of time, because this is a very large organizational endeavor that you've taken on. As you said, there's all kinds of tours and lectures. There's a couple of keynote speakers, and you could just mention briefly what those are, with Sarah Koenigsberg and Dr. Kaylee Swift.
Yes. Sarah is speaking about beaver in the eastern Washington area. She has done a documentary on the beaver in eastern Washington, and she'll be speaking about that. So obviously we cover a lot more than just the cranes in our whole program. And she's the Friday night speaker, which is a free lecture. And then on Saturday evening at the banquet, anyone that has purchased the tickets for the banquet will get a lecture from Carly Swift. And that is, her lecture is, oh my goodness.
Well, I've got your brochure here. It says, "When the Freezer Breaks, Cashing in a Warming World."
Right. And what it is, and I just wanted to, my apologies, but what it is it's about these jays actually in Denali National Park have to hide enough food to get them through the winter. And it's talking about all the things they go through in order to stash enough food to keep them fed all through the winter because they stay local there.
So it's really a festival of a lot of things about nature. We've got the beavers. Do the beavers play a role over there in Othello to create these fields that the cranes like to stop in?
Well, they do in one sense, and that is the cranes want to roost in ankle-deep water, ankle-deep for a crane. And basically, some of the stuff on the wildlife refuge, there's an area where they have simulated a beaver dam that gets shallow water for the cranes to roost in. That also occurs down on Scutney Reservoir naturally and also on Crab Creek naturally and a few other areas. So the beaver could be part of that. And, of course, the beaver with their dams and the ponding on creeks really create a lot of habitat for a lot of birds and a lot of mammals and a lot of fish.
Well, that's fantastic. And food for the cranes on their journey, as you say, up to Alaska. So just briefly, here we are in Sandpoint, Idaho, and our listeners will hear about the festival that you have going on. It's the Othello Sandhill Crane Festival. Othello is about 40 miles south of Moses Lake, is my understanding. Do people come from all over to enjoy this festival and see the sandhill cranes?
Oh, yes. The majority are probably city dwellers, which is really good to get these city folk out into the country and see what life is like out here. And they come, but of course there's rural people as well. They come from, usually it's around 20 states that we have visitors from. And as of this year, we've had at least one, two, or three different groups of international visitors. They normally have relatives in this area, but we even attract from outside of the U.S.
So if anyone's listening to this recorded interview, but how would someone get a hold of you to find out more? Obviously, you must have a website. What is that website?
Okay. The website... Boy, you're catching me on that one, aren't you? Othello Sandhill Crane Festival.org.
Okay.
Othello Crane Festival.org.
Okay.
Othello Sandhill Crane Festival.org.
And you can probably find out there's a phone number, there's a Gmail account you can contact and get all the information. And I just want to say thanks for giving us a picture of this. It sounds really exciting. Festival that you have coming up over there in Othello, Washington. So thanks so much, Kurt. Anything else you want to say before we sign off here?
Just that we're looking forward to the visitors, and we learn a lot from them as well as them learning what we have here in the basin. And that's really great, Susie.
Well, thank you so much, Kurt Brownwort, co-chair of the Othello Sandhill Crane Festival coming up in Othello, Washington, March 20th through the 22nd. And again, thanks for chatting with me today, Kurt.
You're welcome.